Show me the money.
If you're watching this video right now, you are likely in the top 10% of the world's population as far as wealth goes.
Your only responsibility is to put meat on the table.
Show me the money.
Name of the game? Move the money from your client's pocket into your pocket.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed,
show me the money,
for lack of a better word, is good.
10%.
Greed is right. Greed works.
And so you have young people going to university coming away with a huge debt.
And you need to make a vow of faith of $1,000.
Millions of people every night go to bed without food. And millions of people are throwing away their food.
Top 10%.
Huge debt.
Greed works.
My name's Pete, and I grew up in a large family down in Devon, and we didn't have a lot of money, so my interest in finances really came out of having to be very frugal and sort of put pennies together and try and make ends meet. I would say the main problem that comes up when people are interested in having a conversation about money is that they just don't know where they're at. They often will have sort of one pot of money, and their salary goes in and their expenses kind of go out here and there, but at any one moment they have no idea whether they can afford the next month, whether they can go out and buy that dress that they want. They just have no idea whether they're in a good financial situation or not.
When you look at our parents' generation, it was all it was cash and physical bank statements. It was very easy to see what money you had, and you would check every month, go through, see what you'd spent your money on.
These days we've got Apple Pay, online banking, internet shopping. It's just numbers on the screen, so you don't really know where you're at. You don't kind of have a feel for, is this real money? Am I actually spending? I think it's just so easy to spend and just not realise that it's money going out of your account. One of the things I'm involved with is running a money course that Christians Against Poverty set up called Cap Money. And on this course, we basically teach people to budget, save and spend. So we teach them a system so that they can manage their money, know where they're at, and then allocate it to all the different places that it needs to be. And then they know at any point in time, yes, I've got money for that. I know I can afford my food. I know I can pay the bills. So it all works together, and it's just a really liberating system. So people find a lot of freedom from putting the system in place. I think that these days, money is one of these big taboo subjects that a lot of people don't like to talk about. It's almost at the level of sex and death, and actually it's something that we kind of want to bring out and be free to talk about in a non-judgmental way, because only then will people seek help and start putting in place systems and practices to actually manage your money in a more sensible way. And we also want to model that. We want to model that we can be free around money, that it won't control us, but we can use it for all the good stuff that God intended for it. So we want to be a people that model what it is to be content, to be living within our means, and to be just people that are free around money.
So we've been doing this series of Money Talks. This is the second one. We're calling it Life After Debt, because we want to look at how money management works. And actually, we want to have a situation where every single person sees a way that they can get out of debt, whatever kind of debt that you're in. And the fact of the matter is that our whole financial system is based on the basis of debt itself. And so if you missed last week, it'd be great if you could go and catch up. It's on the website, woodlandsmetro.church/moneytalks. When I got to university, my mother terrified me. She sent me in with this story, which I could not get out of my head, and it has been a huge impact on my life. She basically said, Philip, when you go to university, you'll be fending for yourself, you'll be cooking for yourself, your life is in your own hands, I won't be there for you. I want you to promise me that you will always cook pork well. I said, no, why do I need to cook pork well? And then she told me a horror story. And I'm going to tell you this horror story. She said, if you don't cook pork properly, if it's not properly cooked, if it has been handled by anyone that has a particular kind of infection, you will catch something from your pork called a tapeworm.
Yeah.
A tapeworm, a little microscopic little bit of worm that's in the meat that you can't see, but it will go into your stomach. And once it's in your stomach, it will go through your intestine. And once it's in your intestine, it has suckers and hooks, and it will hook and suck onto your intestinal wall, and it will grow to a length of up to 36 feet inside your stomach. And while you eat all the food that goes down into your system, the worm will eat it up. And no matter how much you eat, you will always be hungry. The more you eat, the more hunger will gnaw away at you. Because instead of the nutrients doing what they should do to your body, that tapeworm is hogging it for itself. And you will die feeding yourself and yet starving to death. I tell you what, these days, and from that moment on, I cook my pork like it's as tough as Kevlar. It can stop bullets, because I don't want to get that tapeworm. The fact of the matter is that a creature that gets a hold of you, that takes what's supposed to be coming to you, takes it for itself so that you're always hungry, never satisfied, always eating, never full, always reaching out, never being totally happy and content. That is a great picture of what the Bible talks about when it talks about the thing behind money, mammon, or the money god. It's that kind of, it's like a spiritual reality that so many of us in our society, we can get gripped by something and it takes a hold of us. It somehow gets into the system because everyone's infected by this. And you can get this thing that has a hold on you so much that you spend and you spend and you spend, but you don't feel happy. And you have a need and you have a want and you have a desire, but you don't feel fulfilled. Did you know that, we talked about this last week, emotion and spirituality are the biggest factors in the way that we relate to money. It's not just about economics. There's something spiritual, there's something powerful, there's something that gets into, just under our skin as human beings, with the whole thing of materialism, commercial, capitalism, consumerism. It can, if you're not careful, it can exert a hold over you, where you just feel like you're feeding the beast. And emotion can play such a huge part in the way that we relate to money. And for most of us, money issues are not to do with economics, they're to do with emotion. Many people that get into problems with money, with finance, with debt, they don't have money problems, they have emotional problems. They have something in the heart of them which isn't satisfied by what should satisfy it. Back in the 19th century, the richest man in the world was a guy called John D. Rockefeller. You'll have heard of him. He's an American guy, oil magnate. He was asked by one reporter, how much money do you need? And he said, just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. And that's the tapeworm money thing working its way through. No matter how much you've got, no matter how much you've taken, you're always hungry, always wanting more, always wanting to get something else that's going to fill you. Just a little bit more money, just a little bit more possessions, just a little bit more acquisition, just a little bit more stuff in my life, just a little bit more in my salary, just a little bit more of the things that I can hoard and hold and call my own, just a little bit more. And how do we break out of that? How do we get free from that? And the reason that we find ourselves in this position with that kind of that hunger that is unsatisfied, that emotional need which looks for money to fill it, that's going to define me, that's going to give me value and dignity, and look at my clothes and look how well I'm doing and look at the symbol of my status. Today, the average person in the UK spends 10% more than they earn. Actually, I put 10%, it's actually more like 13%, but I didn't want to scare you. The average household debt, and I know that you all put zero, but the average household debt in the UK is £9,500. And we're in the grip of this fever dream with money, where we're drawn to always spend, always accumulate. Do you know, the system, when we talked about this last week, the system, it runs on discontent. Everyone say discontent. Discontent, and that's what the whole thing is powered by. And our advertisers, they rob us of our dignity and then they sell it back to us at the price of their product. It's all about, if I had this, then I would be happy. If I drove this car, then I'd feel good about myself. If we were in this better house, or we had this bigger kitchen, or we had these financial securities, but then we'd feel better. It's all on discontent. And the great news is that Paul, as we looked at last week, when he wrote to the early Christians in the first European church at Philippi, he says to them, I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. He's saying the issue to grapple with is one of contentment. And it's actually contentment that's independent of everything else. It's a contentment that's independent of my bank balance. A contentment that's independent of my salary. It's a contentment that's independent of how many possessions I've got or how squeezed and anxious I feel about money. It's content whether I'm well-fed or whether I am hungry. And Paul says the secret of this is actually through him who gives me strength. In other words, faith in Jesus. A faith in Jesus can disempower the pernicious eating away power of money and materialism and consumerism on us. We're not saying that money is bad. The Bible doesn't say that. But we are saying that it can have a hold on us. And to find that secret that Paul says of a contentment which is not dependent on how great my relationship is, how great my health is, how great my life is, it's just a contentment that I know that I'm loved by God and that he empowers me to live a life and I'm serving him rather than serving the money God. It makes all the difference. But what about actual money management? Does the Bible have anything to say about that? We said last week that there's over 2,000 verses in the Bible all to do with poverty, justice, about greed, about giving. But is there anything that says how to run your accounts, how to get out of debt, how to manage things? Well, actually, you'd be pleased to know that there is. It's one incident where Jesus was talking to his disciples. It's actually from the book of Luke that we've been looking at the last few weeks. And Jesus had a big crowd of people, and he told them a story. And what he was doing is he was actually relating to them something to do with the cost of being a disciple. And like he always did, Jesus was using an analogy, a story. He's saying, it's a little bit like this. This is a spiritual application, but this is the practical, physical reality that I'm using so that you understand where I'm trying to get at. But actually, in this instance, the practical, physical, earthly story that Jesus tells, where he uses principles of common sense and just being wise and smart around money and finances, they're so good that actually we're just going to look at those. Because do you know what? It seems to me that when it comes to money, common sense isn't common. And Jesus is just almost this throwaway story that he gives is so good, it's worth delving into. He tells them this story. He says, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. Or suppose the king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he's able, with 10,000 men, to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything, this is a spiritual point, you have cannot be my disciples. So if we just rewind that back to the beginning, let's see what he says. He says, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down? Everyone say, first sit down.
First sit down.
First, sit down. There's three principles. This is the first principle. And it's a really, really key, vital principle. He says, before you go into a financial transaction, before you commit yourself to anything, first sit down. First sit down. Essentially, there are, four stages of the purchasing process. Stage one is, I want it. Stage two is, can I afford it? Stage three is, actually, do I need it? If I get through that, I've got something, I want it, I can afford it, I need it, then I get it. Now that is how a good financial transaction is supposed to take place. And you heard Pete talking on the video about our parents' generation when they were all fuzzy and lo-fi. But they were able to budget and to have physical pots of money and to go through the books and have a physical bank statement and all those kinds of things. And they would think, okay, I really want this thing, but they would sit down. You know, if someone doesn't have a credit card or access to instant cash, they have to sit and then they have to think, can I afford this? Okay, let me do the figures. And then they have to have a little bit more of a gut. Do I need this? And then they get it. But today, advertisers, salespeople, shops, the whole consumerist conglomerate tries to crush those two things together, want it and get it, so that the middle thing is taken right out. You want it? You get it. You desire it? You acquire it. That's why impulse buying is such a big deal. And the whole thing, the way that, and I've got nothing against the retail industry, but I'm going to lay into it. The way that shops are set up, you know, I would do the same thing. It's just good business. It's good sense. It makes sense. But the way that they do things is to make you impulse buy as much as possible, to tempt you in with offers that seem too good to refuse. You've got to go for it now because it might not still exist. Even the way that shops are put together, it's not by chance, it's not random, and it's definitely not for your benefit. Okay, I'm going to prove it. Corner shop. Think of your local corner shop, Tesco's, Metro, or Sainsbury's local, or whatever it may be, or maybe, who knows, maybe an actual shop with real people in who love the shop and love the community. But your shop, your regular corner shop, do you know what the two most common items that people go into those shops to buy are? Name them.
Milk and bread.
Milk and bread, very good. So milk and bread right at the very beginning of the shop, right at the entrance, is that right?
No.
Where are milk and bread? Right at the back. Are milk and bread next to each other?
No.
Okay, so what you've got to do is you've got to walk down the aisle past all the nice things to get to the very back of the shop. And then to the very back of the shop, you'll find the milk. And then you've got to walk past all the nicest things. In my local Sainsbury's, I've got to walk past this huge, bounteous display of bakery goodies before I can get to the bread. And even then, the ice cream is just out of reach, calling to me, crying out to me, tempting me, flirting with me. Then I get my bread and I get my milk and I walk, and I've got to go through the gauntlet before I can pay for the jolly stuff with every nice thing that you have ever seen. They put a little kind of, you've got to go through this narrow thing on either side. Nice things before you can pay your money. It's designed to appeal. You desire it, acquire it. You want it, get it. Oh, it's right here. It's right in front of you. Go for it. The way that the whole system is set up is designed to make you want to buy things and then make it as easy as possible for you to actually acquire it, to purchase it. You know, we have credit cards. Credit cards. In fact, someone once estimated. In fact, let me just. Let me tell you this. Credit cards make you spend more. Because it's so easy, it's so accessible, it's so clear and quick and easy. My Apple Pay, I've got Apple Pay on my phone. When I pay for something through Apple Pay, I feel cool. Because I'm like, ding! My phone dings at me, and I kid you not, if you've got Apple Pay, you know I'm telling the truth. It vibrates in my hand. And I get this kind of buzz of reward system that just goes, hey, I feel good. Let me do that again. Ice cream, you're back in the game. Bam! Because it's designed to make me just think, I want it, I get it. I want it, I get it. But Jesus says it's so important. This is vital. The first thing that you do, sit down. And when you sit down, you buy yourself time to bring in those central ingredients again. I can afford it. Do I need it? Well, maybe I can't afford it. Maybe I don't actually need it. Maybe I do need it, but I can't afford it. But whatever it is, I need those things. And in this case, time is on your side. I would suggest that when you go shopping, that you, unless you know exactly what you want, that you aim to not buy on a shopping trip until you've taken a look, and then first sit down. Get back in the car, get back to your home. Think it through, work out, do I really need this thing? Can I afford it? Because when we go out, it's so easy. I got a credit card, they gave me an £8,000 limit. I could go for bread and milk and buy a car. Because it's so easy, it's so immediate, there's no buffer. And so Jesus says, look, this is just common sense, you know, this is really simple stuff. First of all, sit down next to me. All you need to do is bite, yes, if you were alive in the 80s, you know that one. But all you need is just a little bit of time. And when you buy that time back, it gives you that psychological breathing space to be able to push back from that instant desire to take the thing that is being tempted in front of you. I know this is true because the shops don't even, they're not even subtle about it. Back in Christmas, I was walking through Cabot Circus, I saw House of Fraser. I walked past this sign in the window, literally couldn't believe it, I had to walk past again, and I took a picture of it. It said this, I took this on my phone, get what you want, not what you need. They're not even being subtle about it. They're not trying to keep their secrets to themselves. Or if they found out that this is what we're really doing, they wouldn't buy us, they wouldn't trust us. No, they tell you, straight up, you don't need it, but you want it. Get it, want it, get it, want it, get it. It's so easy. We will give you all kinds of things to make it happen now. And you know that in the UK, I said that credit cards make you spend more. Actually, one researcher said that people with credit cards they're likely to spend 34% more on a credit card. When you have a credit card, 50% of people don't pay the balance off each month. And so that credit, you know, that bit where it could be interest-free now becomes the standard rate, 19.9%, if you are lucky. So Jesus says, first sit down. Because that credit card, you think, hey, I'm getting 3% cash back. Yes, but it's costing you 34% more in terms of the things that you buy that you wouldn't have bought otherwise. So, back to the passage. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost? First sit down is the first step. Estimate the cost is the second step. Now, we've actually provided something for you. What we've done is we've come up with, there's 10 of these, there's three little sheets, it's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. But this is a reality check. This is something that you can use, anyone that wants them, they're just on the speakers here at the front of the end. But you can get them. This is how you add up, what is my income? What are all the sources of income that I've got? Whether that is a salary or child support or benefits or whatever it may be. And then the next couple of pages are, what are the things that I am spending? It's really difficult today. It's really difficult to figure out how much money you actually have because we've got all these pulls on our money and they're all happening sort of automatically. We're not walking down to the bank and paying checks to the gas board. It's all done by direct debit. But you've got all these different things, taxes and council taxes and charges for your TV and charges for your phone and your monthly thing for your mobile and all these different things that can be just hemorrhaging out of your account, but you don't know what you've got. How can you possibly estimate the cost if you don't know how much money you have and how much money you've got available? So it's really important. So if you'd like to take one of these, even just to look at it, even if you don't go through it, it's really worth your time. But it's worse than that because the things that we buy cost us more than we think, particularly in our society, in our system. You know, with credit and with finance available, I'm going to give you just a little, in fact, I've done a little bit of research on this. All my figures are solid. I've researched this. I've researched the fact that, actually, if you went to the cinema this weekend, your tickets would cost you, let's say, £10. Okay? Two tickets, it's a double day, £20. Okay, you go to see Batman versus Superman, you spend £20. You decide, I'm going to be frugal. I'm not going to go for the 3D. I'm going to go for the glasses. I'm going to just pay £10 per ticket. Two people, £20 per ticket. You pay with your credit card. However, your credit card, if you're one of those 50% that doesn't pay the entire balance off each month, then your credit card can actually work against you. Most credit cards are around about, like I said, 19.5% interest. Some of them go up to literally 50, 65% interest. But say a good one, 19.5% interest. If you pay off the minimum amount each month, that's usually 3%. Do you know how long it will take you to pay off those cinema tickets for that 2 hours on a Saturday evening if you just pay the minimum amount? It will take you 15 years, give or take. And by that time, those cinema tickets will have cost you £40. You're literally paying twice as much as you should.